Welcome to the Book Show. For decades, Tom Perata has been one of the most perceptive observers of American life, mapping the emotional terrain of suburbs with novels like Election and Little Children, and the acclaimed HBO adaptation of The Leftovers. His latest, Ghost Town, turns inward toward memory, adolescence, and the lingering pull of the past. Tom Perata is next on The Book Show. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Tom Perata has built a career chronicling the uneasy rhythms of American suburban life, often with humor, always with a sharp eye for longing, disappointment, and the quiet dramas unfolding, often behind closed doors. The best-selling author of Election, Little Children, and The Leftovers returns now with Ghost Town, set in 1970s New Jersey. Ghost Town centers on Jimmy Perrani, a 13-year-old reeling from the death of his mother. Adrift in grief and disconnection, Jimmy falls in with two older teenagers, one reckless, one enigmatic, who introduce him to risk, rebellion, and even the possibility of contacting the dead. The novel unfolds largely in retrospect as an older Jimmy, now a writer, looks back at that formative summer and the ways it continues to shape him. As Perata suggests, the ghosts we carry never fully disappear. The book is Ghost Town, a novel, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Tom Perata back to The Book Show. How are you?
I'm good, and thank you for having me. You brought me on number of times in my career, and I'm really grateful.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm a great fan of your work, and so enjoy it. This novel is not an exception to that. It is it's a very thoughtful and, I would think, personal novel. Give us a little idea of how it came about.
It was gestated during the pandemic. My mom was in her late 80s at the time and was beginning to have some health problems. And of course, she was isolated and living in the house that I grew up in. And I ended up spending a couple of years, you know, traveling back to New Jersey to help her out. And, you know, it was just a very powerful thing to go back to the house that I grew up in and feel this absence of all the life that had been in it. You know, it was just such a quiet house that had once been such a lively place. And it started me thinking about the way that the past can be sort of thought of as a place of ghosts. And those ghosts sometimes would break through the surface, and it just brought me back to that world. So, you know, Jimmy is not me. My mother didn't die when I was 13, but it was a way, I think, to talk about the feelings of sadness and loss in a fictional way, to have a little distance on them.
And to bring it back to that time, to that era.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's something about being in a place that you remember from 50 years ago that makes you so aware of the way that the world has changed, the way that the culture has changed, and to just be able to mark time in a very, I think, vivid way.
What was it like for, as you were writing this, to... Because I would assume there was a lot of contemplation, and also you were grieving for your mother as well, that all of that takes place, and I don't know if one informs the other or it just sort of happens and you don't even realize it until it's over.
I think I was aware that I was trying to process some feelings. But, you know, I think there's a, you know, it, this, what, you know, it's fiction, it's not therapy, and it's something that I want to bring to a reader. And so I think, you know, part of that process was to reconstruct the 70s and kind of bring the reader back into a time that is just so different from the one we live in now. You know, Jimmy finds himself adrift in the summer after eighth grade. His father goes off to work in the morning. His sister goes off to work in the morning. And he's just on his own in the way that kids used to be and really aren't now in the suburbs. And I think he has to kind of improvise a life. And he finds that he can't connect with his old friends, that, you know, their happy-go-lucky ways just don't fit in with his mood. And he finds himself drawn to these older, sort of darker and you know, possibly more damaged teenagers who introduce him to all kinds of new stuff. And so the book, you know, it's about grief, but it's also about, you know, finding yourself a little bit over your head at that age, you know, ending up in complicated situations that you don't know how to handle.
I love the line that it's fiction, not a novel, and not therapy. It strikes me as you're writing it that there are so many connections to you and to New Jersey and to this place and to these ideas, but once you're there, you're very much in this 13-year-old's shoes, and Jimmy brings us to this moment, and he is distraught, and yet even with that grief is a 13-year-old kid, and that must have been fun to explore that.
Yeah, well, you know, that is something that has been a pretty consistent through line in my work, is a fascination with adolescence and it, you know, the way in which choices we make before we're kind of fully aware of who we are, you know, do determine both, you know, our identities, but also the trajectories that our lives will take. And I think that time is just really charged. It's full of unfamiliar situations and dilemmas. I think as we get older, we're kind of more prepared for what life throws at us. But when you're 13 and everything is new and adults aren't watching, you're kind of having to improvise and understand with a you know, kind of a limited information. I mean, that's one of the things the book is about. You know, now I think kids are just swimming in a sea of information, and it's overwhelming, and sometimes, you know, can be too much for them to handle. But in those days, you know, we were kind of left to our own devices. And if you had some strange older kid telling you the world was this way or that way, sometimes you believed them.
Tom Prada is our guest on this week's book show. The name of the new novel is Ghost Town. Now seems just as good a time as any to ask you about the Ouija board and how that came into the novel and wanting to explore a communication with those ghosts.
Yeah, well, like a lot of kids who grew up, like a lot of adults who grew up in the 70s, I experimented with a Ouija board when I was a kid, and it was just for fun back then. And I think I remember, you know, we were asking the Ouija board if, you know, who had a crush on who, you know, and it was all kind of a lark. And yet at the same time, there was something unnerving about the way that the pointer moved, and it didn't seem to be coming from anybody's will. And I remember that when I left my friend's house and walked home, I was thoroughly spooked and felt like the world was full of ghosts. And to the point where I've never done it again. I just felt like, oh, I don't want to go into that zone. But it did make me think, like, if you were a kid in the 1970s, and you lost someone. And, you know, Jimmy, a lot of this book is about him needing his mother and wanting to sense her presence around him. And every now and then he'll hear her voice, you know, and it's clearly coming from inside his head. But other times, you know, he's sort of desperate for that connection to not be severed. And the Ouija board becomes a conduit for that. This older girl who lost her father tells him that it's a way to talk to dead people. And he's willing to give it a try because for various reasons. One is which he likes this older girl and enjoys spending time with her, but also because maybe it's true. And they sit down and they use the Ouija board and things happen. And that's, I don't want to spoil any of that for the book, but it does seem like it's something that makes a lot of sense to him. He says the Ouija board is like, it's like a finicky piece of technology. It felt real to him in a way that maybe, you know, religion, he was starting to lose his Catholic faith, but he thought, well, this Ouija board might be worth a try. You know, it's just, it's magical thinking of a teenager, but things do happen when he and Olivia use this board.
From the onset of writing the novel, were you thinking in the terms of ghosts, of telling your version of a ghost story?
I've been interested in genre, in sort of integrating genre fiction into literary fiction, you know, The Leftovers being the clearest example. But I think I have, you know, used some of the pacing and techniques of crime novels in books like Little Children as well. And in this case, this is my first venture into the world of ghost stories. One of the things I did was to make the older Jimmy, a writer who uses this nom de plume, Jay Perry. He has a children's TV series called Ghost Teacher. And he realizes as he looks back on his life that he's been writing about ghosts, ghosts and orphans, he says, that those are the subject of all of his works. And so what I wanted to do, you know, I started out with ghosts as a metaphor. Like when I was at my mom's house, I could feel the past. And I was sort of using the word ghosts in a kind of loose way to describe that. But the book takes ghosts very literally.
The fact that as you're writing this and you look at it as a ghost story, but was there also, when you came up with it as what you called it, the device of having it in a flashback and looking back as an older writer, that there is a point where you're on pretty solid ground there yourself, aren't you?
Yes. Well, I think, you know, there was something about, again, being home in the place where I was a kid and thinking, okay, you know, when I was that age, maybe I had just started to fantasize about being a writer. And there was something, you know, I kind of felt like, I did it. That thing that I had fantasized about as a kid, I'd had this career and it had taken me not just through, you know, publishing books, but getting involved in screenwriting and you know, working on TV shows. And I gave this character, Jay Perry, a version of that history. His work isn't exactly like mine. I never did a kids show. I never did an animated show, but some of his works have, you know, what I thought were sort of funny, you know, almost like funhouse versions of some of the stuff that I've done over the years. There's a story that seems to borrow from Little Children, for example. So I think people who have been following my work over the years will maybe get you know, some little Easter eggs in the history of Jay's writing.
Once again, I mentioned, you know, you're talking about the 1970s, specifically 1973, and how did you decide you wanted to deal with that? Because it was a very white community, and you look at it in a pretty honest way. And I assume that's an extremely conscious decision to do so.
Yes. So the novel takes place in a town called Creamwood, New Jersey. That's a fictional town, but it's based on the town I grew up in, which is Garwood, New Jersey. There are lots of you know, maple woods and other woods in New Jersey, fan wood. But it was very specifically the town that I grew up in was a working class town that was segregated. It wasn't like an accident that Black people didn't live there. Realtors wouldn't show the houses, banks would approve the mortgages. And, you know, there was tension. I wrote a story in my first book, Bad Haircut, called Race Riot, which was about there, every summer there'd be some, you know, rumor going around that there was going to be a fight. If you know Bruce Springsteen's song, My Hometown, it kind of refers to some of the same sort of tensions that we felt then. And you know, somewhere in the late 80s, early 90s, it stopped being an all-white town. And when I was back in recent years, my mother had Black neighbors. My mother had neighbors of, you know, all races. And, it you know, the town was quite different from where I'd grown up, but it was also the Trump era. It was also the George Floyd moment. And so there was this sense like, okay, on the surface, things have changed for the better, but you know, those ghosts, the ghosts of the darker political past, they were also, you know, kind of lurking in the background.
When you talk about that lurking in the background, you're aware of what's there, right? You like to explore and think of the things that you have access to write about, to explore and to have your characters interact with.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, I think one of the things I've become more aware of as I've gotten older is that even though I'm writing, you know, often about a very specific small town and, you know, people who are not, you know, historical figures, that their private lives intersect with public lives. And to some degree, I'm writing maybe political allegories. So that, you know, election was set in a high school and it was about, you know, a ridiculously heated competition for who's going to be school president. But it was also trying to, I think, make some points about, you know, American politics and some of the issues that inform our political choices. And in this book, I was, you know, writing about a boy, you know, grieving for his mom, but also writing about, you know, a town that would probably rather not grapple with its racist past.
Given that you have, since writing the first novels and then going into writing screenplays and that work going back and forth, does the screenwriting, has that had an impact on your novel writing at all, or vice versa?
Yeah, you know, I go back and forth on this because sometimes I think writing screenplays has made me more appreciative of the tools that I have at my disposal as a fiction writer. So, you know, you can move in time in fiction so much more easily than you can in film. You know, you have to kind of recreate reality every time you move into the past. But in fiction, you can say, well, a year ago, you know, this happened, and it's just so seamless. Or you can go into long in inner monologues for characters. It's hard to do that in film, you know, unless you do it through voiceover or very clunky expositional scenes. So in one sense, I feel like I, you know, there's screenwriting, which demands a certain kind of strict set of rules. And then there's fiction, which is freer and allows you to move in different ways. On the other hand, when you look at Ghost Town, it's divided up into very short chapters. And in some ways it feels like it has a rhythm that was familiar to me from screenwriting. There's a lot of cuts from, you know, this scene to the next scene, and the scenes themselves are pretty self-contained. So I can see it both ways. Like I am very aware of the differences between the two, but I think sometimes the virtues of one will help me to work in the other mode. So I think Ghost Town does have a cinematic feel, and it does have a the rhythm that maybe reminded me of the kind of movement you get in a good screenplay.
It seems, and I don't know, but it seems like that would have an impact on the editing, as far as that it is a that it's streamlined much more, and that there is a pacing that is a bit more rapid than perhaps it would be if that were not, if screenwriting were not a pursuit of yours.
Yeah, and the, you know, I'll add one more element to the mix here, which is, you know, I, like a lot of other people, I become very interested in audiobooks.
Yeah.
And that has made me much more, I think, sensitive to the oral nature of fiction. And so one of the things I did while writing Ghost Town was just constantly read it out loud to myself. And I, if I felt like things were dragging, or if I felt like this sentence was awkward, you know, I really wanted that surface to be really clear. And I wanted there to be a rhythm that pulled the reader forward. I think I had three different modes of storytelling in mind, and they were all kind of in use at the same time.
It seems, does that help with the humor? Because the humor really comes out.
Yeah, you know, I think that the humor is just part of my worldview. I think there's some sense to that, you know, that I just tell a story in a sense with a straight face, but that if you somehow you can tell, if you can describe life with a straight face, it often comes out funny. I mean, people say ridiculous things. People lie to each other. People, you know, misunderstand really important things. There's just that human comedy of people like blundering through their lives. So I don't often think of myself as like trying to write a funny scene. It's more like if I write the scene in a way that's true to how I see it, there will be funny things happening.
And I guess what I was thinking of is, as in on audio form, as you're reading it, that it'll come off differently to the ear than it will as you're reading it. And the way it's read, that it sticks the landing, that it still works as humor.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's some element of, when you describe it like that, there's some element of comic timing of,
yeah,
you know, just knowing how to shape it so that there are little surprises for the reader, and not stepping on the joke, and not going way past the joke, you know, knowing where to cut off. So one of the interesting things about the way that this book is written with a multitude of short chapters is you have a lot more beginnings and a lot more endings. And those are things that I really like to write. And I think, you know, the transitions can be startling to the, you know, whoa, we've jumped in time. And the reader has to kind of get oriented. But then I think that at the ending, there's that moment of sort of silence. And so that last sentence will kind of hang in the white space and resonate, I think. And often, if you can end it on a really vivid image, I think that that's a very effective thing too.
When you're writing about the 70s, and especially from a vantage point, in some ways a flashback, does the current day, does what is happening now, where we are now, have an impact? Does it affect your writing, maybe consciously, maybe not consciously?
I do think it does. And you know, one of the readers, one of the writers I was thinking of in writing this book was Philip Roth, who just kept going back to the Newark of his childhood. And when he was young in, you know, Goodbye Columbus or in Portnoy's Complaint, there's this wicked comedy. You know, he's just very irreverent, and he's a little bit angry, and you can sense his restlessness and his desire to get out of there and go to someplace more sophisticated. And then in later books that he wrote as an older man, American Pastoral or Nemesis, there's a kind of mature almost melancholy appreciation for that world and for the way that the adults cared for the kids and the way that he was loved, and the sort of solid American values that he saw in that time. So he's almost a different writer, you know, looking back from his perspective as an older person. And I think so some of that is the case. Like, I wrote a book, Bad Haircut, in my 30s, and I think that feels one way. I think it's not so suffused with loss the way that this one is. But then also, as I was mentioning before, you know, I had thought that some of the dark past of you know, a segregated town, I thought we'd gotten past that. But I think the political climate in this country, you know, in the past 10 years, you know, it's in that, you know, Make America Great Again. It's kind of this nostalgia, but for a time maybe that I don't think we should be nostalgic for, you know. So yes, I think that sense of the ghosts of the past are back, politically speaking, was definitely in my mind as I was writing the book.
This goes back to an earlier question of you saying, you know, this isn't therapy, but does it help you when you are actively writing a novel? Is that something that is, I mean, obviously there's nothing easy about it, but is it a moment where you feel like you have the control to figure out not only what's going to happen within the confines of the novel, but also just to have some control over your life and what is happening day to day?
Yeah, I mean, I said it wasn't therapy, but it can be at least a substitute for therapy. I think one of the things that happens in Ghost Town is that it's a classic Freudian thing. You know, Jay Perry starts off by saying, I don't like to think about what happened in the summer when I was 13 years old. Mm. I never go back to that town anymore because the memories are too much for me. He gets invited back to the town, and he's part of the invitation is to honor his father. There's a building named after his father. And he wants to honor his father, and he decides to go back. In the course of that, he starts thinking about that summer that he had told himself he would not think about. It is about kind of dealing with repressed memories and the power that comes when you can take something that was too hot to handle and describe it clearly and see yourself and maybe forgive yourself a little to suddenly see, like, I was just a kid. I was vulnerable. I found myself in some bad situations and some awful things happened, but, you know, I wasn't responsible. For Jay Perry, I think there is a kind of therapy in clearly telling the story, telling a painful story in seeing it clearly for the first time.
The name of the new novel is Ghost Town. It is published by Scribner. Tom Prada, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks so much for taking the time out.
Oh, my pleasure, Joe. And thank you again. I really have enjoyed talking to you over the years.
Tom Prada is the author of the new novel Ghost Town, published by Scribner. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke. Write to us at book@wamc.org. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.